Do not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
Crossover Times, uncovering both hemispheres. It's a featured music special on Artist First. Z-Man in on Thursday night, as always. Welcome to the club. You guys know all you guys know the password. And thanks for joining us tonight. You know, we're almost up to 1 million listeners a week now. I think we will cross that threshold sometime in the first 2 months of 2010. And it's humbling when back not too many years ago, we had 380 listeners the entire month. Now we get that about every 100 seconds or something like that. Just blows my mind, but it's due in part to the extremely handsome DJs on Artist First Radio. No, I'm joking, of course. That's why we're on radio, because we are hideously, hideously ugly people here. But we bring you beautiful artists, guys that have music in their blood, and it just oozes out of their body. I have no idea where I'm going with this, but I want to welcome back Gary Ault. It's been too long. Gary, welcome back to the microphones.
Well, thank you very much.
So I see you've been busy.
Yep.
Well, we're going to get into your music and your latest project, but we got to back up. There's remind listeners, when you're done listening to this broadcast, there's also a previous show with Gary. It's on the archives. Let's remind everybody that Gary Ault is just like it sounds. .com. You can surf over to the website. And Gary, let's talk about your past a little bit for the folks that missed your first broadcast. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island, born in Brooklyn, raised in central Nassau County.
And there was a truly significant point in your life when your sister Peggy gave you something that changed your life.
Yeah, when I was, I think, around 10 or something like that, I was a drummer in the school band, you know, playing the woodblock and whatever. And she decided, or she heard from somebody, that if I wanted to be a drummer, I should listen to Ginger Baker, because he's, you know, the be-all and end-all of drummers. So she got me Best of Cream, which, you know, I had never heard of it before. And, yeah, I did enjoy Ginger Baker for sure. I mean, he kind of blew me away, and I he became my favorite drummer for a long time. But hearing Eric Clapton's guitar, particularly on Spoonful, was just, I had never heard anything like that before. It just completely amazed me, and I realized I had to kind of rethink my musical education up to that point and get serious about developing some chops.
Now, I think I have that 8-track. I kid you not.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Eric Clapton. I think I'm almost positive, and I think it had Layla on it. Did it not?
I'm not familiar with that particular album, but that's very possible.
It
probably skipped to the next track right in the middle of Layla or something, right?
Well, you can tell that on the album jacket, on the CD cover, looks like someone has spray painted onto a wall. Now it could say laptop is odd, or it says probably Clapton is God.
Oh, on my CD you're talking about?
Yeah, on your CD.
Okay.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, right. Well, that's sort of a tongue-in-cheek joke, mainly to people that know me, because they know that I'm a Clapton fanatic. But I've always felt that as much as he's by far my favorite entertainer, and I've patterned my guitar playing after him in addition to all the other influences, I've always thought that that whole thing, that hype of Clapton as God, is pretty silly, really. I mean, to say that any musician or singer or actor or whatever is in that category is kind of ridiculous, and I think he found it impossible to live up to. So I guess just by kind of like focusing in or kind of zooming in on it, and all you can really read with any definity is the word is, you know. So I think that people that don't are familiar with that little bit of English history probably would say, what in the world is that? You know, so I'm not sure exactly what it means, but it's just my way of kind of making a little bit of a joke about the whole situation.
Well, and it also shows the great respect that just about everybody in the music business has for Eric Clapton.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and let's get it right into the stuff, folks. The new CD is called Not For Sale to Minors. It's got a really clever CD cover. It's got a little tiny child handcuffing what appears to be a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you in the photo there?
No, it's not. I'm not sure who it is, but...
I thought you were bigger than that little kid, you know.
Yeah, no, that's not me, unless it's an old photo.
But the first tune is, I was trying to think, did Johnny Mathis originally make this famous? Who did this originally?
Actually, Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Okay.
You know, I've never really been a big fan of Jerry and the Pacemakers. In fact, I can only think of two songs that I can remember. But this is, for some reason, this song always gave me, I don't know, sort of sentimental feelings, although obviously they're from Liverpool and I'm not. And I just thought it needed to be updated a little bit. It's about twice as long as the original, and it's a little more bluesy, a little slower, and got an extra verse, you know, that kind of thing. So it's one of the few songs on the CD I didn't actually write.
But I did like the way you did it, and this is a great arrangement, and check it out, folks.
This land color is will never turn you away.
You are listening to the music of Gary Ault, our guest. He's back. He's been on before. He's a great friend of Artists First, and I'm pleased to be sharing some time with him tonight. The CD cover, Gary, is not for sale to minors. Well, describe it to our listeners who aren't looking at it right now, and tell us how you came up with that.
Oh, well, if you look at it, it's basically you can see that the sign in the picture originally said for sale to minors, which, you know, means that it's that anybody can buy this. But then it's been vandalized with spray paint by a person that turns out is an adult, in fact, is a policeman, coincidentally. And he's being arrested by a little kid. So it's just a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing. But what I'm really trying to say is that, to me, music should be all-inclusive. I mean, I've made music that was targeted, you know, young people or whatever, but really, if you're an adult, you might want to listen to it, too. It doesn't really matter to me. And if a five-year-old doesn't want to listen to, you know, Mozart's 40th Symphony, that's his prerogative, but it shouldn't be because it's not okay for him to listen to that. You know, in other words, I think music should be all-inclusive and not made that, you know, so that we have to put parental advisory on it and things like that. And so it's just my way of kind of in a tongue-in-cheek way of saying, like, this CD is for everybody. You know, I don't care if you don't like it or if you do like it. It doesn't matter to me how old you are or what sex you are or anything. It's just for everybody, which is pretty most of the music out there, I realize. But that's the message.
Well, and it's good to appeal to a broad audience as well. I think your music would be accepted by a broad audience. I think, you know, it's, as we talked about in the last show, your stuff is for everybody.
Yeah, and I've gotten some very good feedback from, you know, my kids are in their early, I say kids, but they're actually adults now, but they're in their early to mid-20s, and their friends have all heard it, and I get feedback, oh, you know what my favorite song is? And they'll tell me something that I think, wow, I had no idea that anybody under 40 would like this, you know. So, I can never tell when I write something who's going to like it. I'm just gratified that such a broad audience does enjoy it.
I think I want to touch on this for just a second. What you just said, that you were surprised as that someone under 40 would like certain types of music you write. And we are seeing more and more of that, being a nightclub band, and we play, you know, covers. And to see the music that goes over now in the clubs with the younger and younger crowd. Mm-hmm. I wonder why. You know, and I hate to editorialize, and I'll keep this brief, but where is the next generation of, for instance, Kool and the Gang? Where's the next Doobie Brothers? Where's the next Aerosmith, the next Rolling Stones, the next Bob's? Who's the next Bob Seger or Bruce Springsteen? Or Eric Clapton? I see a generation where there's a giant vacuum. Oh, there's certainly some people that could be mentioned there, but as a group of people, I think this previous generation decided to get beats and talk into a microphone and never learned how to play and never took the time to dig it out in the trenches like you have. And okay, I'm done editorializing. What's your opinion?
Well, I wonder the same thing, where the next, well, of course, we've been wondering for 40 years where the next Beatles are going to come from, and maybe it's a pointless search, you know, but I don't really know what the answer to that is. I think what's always amazed me is the music that I grew up with. I talked about Clapton and Cream earlier, and, you know, all those guys, Rolling Stones and, Jeff Beck and all those guys in the London scene in the early 60s grew up listening to black blues men from the United States who made records like in the 30s and 40s. And I, to this day, I can't figure out how in the world, where they even got the records, first of all, and why that appealed to them. I just, the fact that they would take, you know, like Clapton took Robert Johnson's original Crossroads, and he did what we all are familiar with it, which has, you know, except for the lyrics, has nothing to do with the original recording. And it's mind-boggling to me how these, you know, how these young British boys, white boys, decided that this is the kind of music that they want to hear, and it somehow resonated with them, and they turned it into what we hear today. And that's how I discovered the old Robert Johnson records and Muddy Waters and things like that. I don't know that happens today, unfortunately. I think, you know, when kids listen to what they listen to, I don't know that they necessarily go back and say, oh, well, who is this Chuck Berry guy? Let's see what that's about. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the answer to that is.
I like the all-inclusive phrase, old school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely old school, no doubt about it. But I did get to interview Robert Lockwood Jr., one of those.
Wow.
He was 96 years old at backstage at a hotel in Cleveland before he went on to perform, and he claims that he taught Robert Johnson how to play.
Mm.
Now, I don't know. But that's pretty cool. I mean, the guy was hot. I stayed for the show, and the guy was, okay, he had to sit down. The guy's 96, folks. But you know what? He still had the licks, and he still tore through it. And, you know, it's great to think maybe some of us old guys can play on for a few years longer. Okay, we stink. I know. We should quit. The biggest request we get at our gigs is, please stop playing. But let's turn to a better band, which is Gary Alt's new CD, which we're playing some tunes off of, Not for Sale to Minors. And Gary would like to play for you next a tune called Think She's an Angel. Please tell us about this cut.
What can I tell you about it? It's just a simple, almost kind of a Japanese voicing in the chord structure. But it's just basically about someone that's that kind of thinks that she's an angel. It's kind of based on somebody I used to know that actually was kind of obsessed with angels. And you know, the person in the song who's sort of a fictional character, I guess, is just you know, thinks that she's an angel, but is actually kind of selfish and doesn't even realize it. And you know, so that's all it's about.
She thinks she's an angel, waiting for wings, touches a new life, she comes and she brings her promises, just promises. She thinks she's an angel, gift of sweet charity. I think she's an angel, she flies away from me. On to the next soul, heart open wide, collects all her gifts and locks them aside. But does she give? What does she give? She thinks she's an angel, light for the world to see. I think she's an angel, she flies away from me. She thinks she's an angel, pure epiphany. I think she's an angel. She flies away from me. I know she's an angel. She flies away from me. Oh, she must be an angel. She flies away from me. She flies away from me. She flies away from me. She flies away from me.
You're listening to the music of Gary Ault. In fact, Gary did write that very song, and you chose to have on that cut your friend sing it.
Right, Jason.
And we were just discussing off there, ladies and gentlemen, about how utterly cool it is, and highly recommended that if you can, if you got a couple $100 and you're a musician, that you build yourself your own studio in your bedroom or on your kitchen table, because that's all the space you really need. And you do an excellent, excellent job on the production of your records. Gary, congratulations.
Thank you.
So did it take you a while to, master the equipment, or are you just a natural?
Actually, I'm kind of allergic to technology. it kind of fascinates me. I've always been the kind of person that would try to take a radio apart and figure out how it works. But when it comes to music, I want to make music, and I don't really want it to be, electronic sounding. I like, kind of a natural feel. And as much as I'd like to learn more about the technology, I just feel like, I'm too busy writing songs and I'm too busy recording stuff to worry about, exactly how to get this MIDI thing working. And the other thing is that I don't know if you can tell, but I kind of freeze up when I get in front of a tape recorder. For that reason, I've actually performed relatively conservatively when I'm recording. If I'm playing live, I'll go out on a limb and play some, something I don't even know I could play. And, if I make a few mistakes, what's the difference? Nobody cares anyway. But when I'm recording, I always feel like, you're under a microscope because this is forever going to be on a disc and people are going to listen to that and say, couldn't he have fixed that problem? What's the matter with this idiot, So I'm not, as much as I've learned about the recording process, I guess I'm just allergic to technology, like I said.
So there, it's probably a shorter list to talk about the instruments that you don't play.
Well, let's see. I don't play flugelhorn. I mainly play guitar and piano. I my first instrument was drums, so I still play drums somewhat. And on this album, I've got a little Indian flute my wife bought me a year or two ago. It's an anniversary gift, and so I figured I better do something with that. I play a little flute, normal orchestral flute. That's about it, really. I mean, if you add up all the keyboard instruments, it's a lot of stuff, but it's all the same thing anyway. So.
Well, and it still takes talent to get that thought in your head out into the tape and then out through the speakers. That's a very arduous process, and some people never get through that.
Right. It can be kind of terrifying. Because like I said, it's like you can't take it back once you're actually, you can redo it 50 times, but once you're finally done and say, okay, that's it, then you can't take it back, kind of, sort of. So it's, it's a little, people ask me when I perform live, do you get nervous? Well, no, not really. I don't know. I just play what I play, and if you don't like it, you can leave, I guess. But when it comes to recording, I kind of freeze up, to be honest with you.
I find that similar. It's, I don't know, and I wonder why that is. It's easier to play in front of 10,000 people than it is to play in front of six. What's up with that? I don't know, it's one of those quirky things, the same thing. Many musicians, myself included, tense up for some reason when the recording light comes on. So maybe what we should do is fool ourselves into somehow, I don't know, into thinking the recording light's on. I don't know. Maybe a couple beers would help.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, where do you find time, with all that life has to do, and to find uninterrupted time to lay tracks down and not drive the neighbors crazy and, keep the wife from leaving you? How do you find time for all this?
I just do it whenever I can. I mean, I've got a day job, and I don't force it. If I'm in the car or wherever I am, and a musical idea comes to my mind, I'm listening, I'm watching TV or I'm reading or whatever, I just find a way of putting it down somehow, whether it's on a little voice thing into my cell phone or you know, I'll draw a little staff line on a piece of paper or whatever. And so it's not a matter of finding time. It's just a matter of doing something with it when it pops into my head. Now, as far as recording goes, yeah, I have to block out the time, but and, you know, it just sort of takes care of itself. If I don't have time today, I'll do it tomorrow. If not tomorrow, next week or whatever.
Well, you seem to be cranking out the material. A lot of guys never put out a CD, and you're doing well.
Well, thank you.
And there's I also like that the portrait on the back of your CD. We'll make the listeners buy one to see what we're talking about. If you're just tuning in, Gary Ault is back with us again. He has a new CD out entitled Not For Sale to Miners. And we're about to play another cut that Gary wrote called Rockaway. What inspired this cut?
This is just a little rock and roll thing. I mean, I've always loved rock and roll, Chuck Berry, and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, Rockaway, you know, like two words, Rockaway. It sounds like I don't know, it's probably been done a million times, but let me see if I can do something with it. And then I remembered, I grew up near Rockaway Beach in Queens, New York City, and my grandparents at least a couple of times took us there just to, because they have a place called, it used to be called Rockaway Playland. I don't even know if it's still there. And I just drew on some of the memories, just wrote down, you know, remembered some of the rides we took and things like that, and the car that they drove us there in and all that sort of stuff, and I ended up writing a song. And it's, you know, it's one of those titles that could mean rock away, like let's have a party, or you could say, oh, well, this must be about a place in Queens, New York.
Backward and down, just like it.
You are listening to a featured music special on Artist First World Radio. We put the artist first, and the artist first on this segment is the same guy that's been here with us all show, Gary Ault. You're kind of like a music factory there, Gary. Let's face it. You're probably already working on new stuff, right?
Yeah, it's going to be very different, but yeah.
See? And that's the way it goes. We were talking about how your family's musically inclined and how you're able to incorporate, even your daughter and your son into the picture.
Right. Well, in fact, on this next song that I wanted to play, my daughter, Lindsay, sang. She's 25 years old. My son also used to play drums in my band, and we're switching him up to guitar and vocals now because we just, decided to change things around a little bit. So he also plays piano and, whatever.
Now, see, that would be your family is a good argument for music talent being a genetic component and not a learned component. What's your thoughts on that? Is it nature or nurture?
It might be a little of both, and I'm not really sure. I know that when my kids were little, I mean, from the time, even before they were born, when they were just in the womb, I always felt that music was extremely important just towards mental development. Helps you develop language skills and math skills and all kinds of things. It just keeps your brain working. And I just, I exposed them to as much as I possibly could, whether it was Mozart or Frank Zappa or whatever it was. And they all took piano lessons when they were young, which, they didn't all stick with, but it is part of their upbringing. And they all love music. They play to one extent or another and obviously have other priorities, but I think it stuck with them. I mean, most people love music. I think there's just a lot of people that feel that, there's people that can play music and there's people like me that can't. And I just don't accept that. I think that probably more people have music ability than think that they don't. So I don't know. I'm not sure if it's genetic or not, but I always try to expose them to as much as possible.
Well, I want to go back to what I mentioned earlier about why there's no follow-up generation for many of the classic bands that are still selling out stadiums when they're in their mid-60s that were, that started out in their teens, because it takes a long time for the average person to learn how to play an instrument to where they can play it worthy on a record or on stage. And I don't know that today's instant gratification generation X has the patience to learn how to master an instrument so that you're not laughed off the stage. Okay, I better stop there before my blood pressure goes up. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting. I don't remember where I read this recently, but I was just reading about how in times past, like in the 1800s or whatever, families were typically much more musical. They sat around and they sang. They might not have been able to afford a piano, but they sat around and sang or whatever. And nobody, it wasn't typical for people to, like critique each other and say, you really shouldn't sing. You really stink, But I don't know if it's because of American Idol or what it is, but everybody expects, you got to be great or you're nothing. And it's kind of a shame because, I mean, what's the difference if you're not, Johnny Mathis or whoever your favorite singer is? I mean, just do it and enjoy it and contribute and just have fun. And that's what we try to do. When my kids were pretty little, I hadn't actually had a musical instrument in the house for quite a while. And my wife bought me an acoustic guitar as an anniversary present. I thought, well, I guess I got to do something with this thing and I'll start writing some songs. And we would sit around the living room and just sing. And sometimes my kids would surprise me because they would all of a sudden know these Beatles songs that I didn't even know they had ever heard, and we'd just sing these songs, and it was just a fantastic experience. And I think it's a shame that more people don't just let their hair down and say, maybe I stink, I don't know, but I'm just going to do this because it's fun, and that's all there is to it. And I think, by doing that, you can discover that you've actually got some talent.
And that's a great story that you just told, because I see that so much with my musician friends. Most musicians know a lot of other musicians. Excuse me. Hacking up a fur ball there. Thank God there's a mute on the microphone. My band plays almost every Friday and Saturday, but we're not going to play Saturday night. And I guarantee you, I'll tell you where me and many of the guys from the band will be. in my living room drinking beers playing music because it's fun. We're not getting paid. It's because that's what we like to do. And I think if the generation, the instant gratification generation, would get past the point where you start to get good on your instrument and you can entertain yourself and your friends because you're good and you can play stuff, it becomes like a snowball. I mean, I thank God every day that I have the ability to play piano and have the gift of music and understand it in an abstract nature and can pretty much play anything I hear. And that's most of the way we learn on all the records I play on and all my friends. We don't know a damn thing about sheet music. It's just Chinese to us. Now, how do you operate?
Well, I did learn how to read sheet music way back when. I'm not sure exactly how, if it was being a drummer. I don't really know. But so many of the artists that I listen to, I mean, especially the Beatles, I don't think any of those guys knew how to read sheet music or how to write sheet music or anything. They just had a natural, you know, Lennon and McCartney especially had a natural gift for creating incredible melodies, and they just figured out where to find it on the guitar or whatever it was, and I'm not sure, I guess they recorded it or whatever they did, so they would remember it. A little bit of both is fine with me. I happen to know how to read sheet music, but I don't think it's necessary. I think it helps me because I like to play, you know, a lot of classical piano pieces, and it would be pretty hard to learn otherwise. But, you know, if you want to learn how to play the blues, I mean, just feel it, you know. You can't read that stuff. You just have to feel it.
Very true. And that's not to say that all of us that don't read music wouldn't love to read music. But, you know, it's not nothing we've been able to do all these years or tried to do. I don't know if it help us at this point in time, but certainly I have nothing but deep respect for all these, my goodness, you know, a symphony player, someone like yourself that can sit down and play a piece of Mozart, you know, that's so far beyond what I could do. You know, I couldn't even carry your equipment, Gary. So let's move on to the next song. I believe you would like to play Love for So Long, and is this another one of your pieces, isn't it?
Right.
So what comes to you first, the lyrics or the music?
In this case, I don't actually remember. I think in this case it was the what is that one line? She was in love for what is it? She was in love with love toward the end of the song. And I don't know. I thought that kind of sounded cool, and I thought, well, what would that be about? You know, so I kind of made a little story up in my head about a girl that's in love with love. She just the idea of it, you know, and she, you know, goes from Prince Valiant to Prince Valiant, looking for love because she loves love and doesn't really know how to commit to a relationship. And, you know, so I make up a story in my mind, and then I write the verses. And I don't actually know, in this particular case, where the music came from. I think it just sort of, I was playing with some chords. That's probably what it was, because I like the what I call Steely Dan chords.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That kind of thing, and I did a lot of that kind of thing in this one. So that's it. I had to transpose it so my daughter could sing it, but I think that's the whole story.
That's right, and you're about to hear Gary's daughter singing on this cut.
Right.
One with brown hair met her, hailing a cab. Love at first sight won her heart. Visions of white lace and bridesmaids well up inside. Thin conversation through dinner and wine. shield from the storm. Write the next chapter in his arms, safe and warm. And with they lived happily ever after, no harm or evil to speak. Never wake up from her dream world, turn to a bare page. She's been that reverie's made of, till he discovered the truth. Like those before him and after, found she was in love with love. She's been falling in love for so long, filling her hope chest with cobwebs. Dreams, no loneliness, no.
A nice effect there. You are listening to a featured music special on Artist First World Radio. Z-Man and Gary Ault. He is back for an encore appearance with a bunch of new stuff. When you guys get done listening to this broadcast, you can surf over to the archive section and hear another hour of Gary Ault music, which is up there from a previous engagement. Gary, as we were talking off air, the song that we just heard and the song that we're about to hear are seemingly, what do I want to say, generation crossover tunes? Is that the right way to put it?
I guess so. I'm not sure why or how, but when I played the CD for my, you know, from some of the young people in my life, my kids and their friends, I keep saying kids, but like I say, they're actually adults, but and their friends, they love the song that we just heard, Love for So Long. My son goes around humming it all the time. He says it's the best song I've ever written, and I don't know if I agree with that, but he, you know, awesome is one of the words he uses to describe it. And I just, it surprised me because I really was kind of, when I wrote it, I was sort of getting to the point where I was about done recording the CD and I thought I needed another track or two. And I kind of thought, ah, this is probably album filler, you know. It's, you know, maybe some people will like it, a lot of people won't. So I didn't really think a lot of it, to be honest with you. And it just blows my mind that so many of the young people have just kind of latched onto it and love it, which is gratifying. You know, you never know who's going to like what.
Well, do you, here you were just telling us how you considered this the dreaded album filler. Oh, good, I was going to point my finger and scorn you for saying that.
I'm sorry.
Because of the of what the record business used to do. They'd put one good song in an album and make you spend $20 to buy it.
Right.
And then they'd fill it. But I don't, like I say, I don't think anything on this album is album filler.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to use the expression that way, because I agree with you, that's pretty annoying. But anyway, that's kind of what I thought it was when I wrote it.
Well, can you be creative on demand? I mean, you know, like, yeah, I got a guitar, I'll start writing songs. Or, you know, does it come and go in spurts?
I think it comes and goes, but it also depends if I have a particular theme in mind, like a project theme. Because I've done other albums in the past that you know, haven't been on the show that were like, you know, just for kids or you know, had a particular theme. And when I, you know, and I'm not saying like a play or something like that, just a whatever theme is unifying about it. And what tends to happen is I start thinking, well, maybe I should write a song about, you know, this or that, and then it sort of just comes out. But if I'm not doing it that way, if I'm just, you know, I don't really sit down and say I'm going to write a song today. Those old Tin Pan Alley guys, I don't know how in the world they ever did that. They go to work like at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they finish up whenever they finish up, and their whole job is to write a song or whatever. I can't do that. I could go for like months or weeks or whatever with no ideas, and then all of a sudden I can write three songs in one day. It's just whatever happens to come to mind.
It was interesting listening to P.F. Sloan and Artie Kornfeld hired by Don Kirshner for $75 a week to write music. P.F. Sloan was putting out tunes when he was 12 years old.
Wow.
You know, back then, the music also was a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a couple of chords. That's it. You know, A, B, A, B, A, B or something. But, it's fascinating that some people can write on demand. And here we are talking about this, and many listeners are going, man, I couldn't write a song to save my life. And, you know, it seems like something easy for you to do. What others are, it's something they'll never do because they just simply will never have the skills to do so.
I think there's probably some truth to the fact that some people are going to be better at that than others, the same as somebody could hit a baseball better than somebody else. But I think that a lot of people could, develop that skill that they just don't know that they can do it. Because I'll always say to people, okay, I'm sitting across your kitchen table, let's say, and I'll just say, just in your head, think of a melody. Just anything. You know, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it sounds like something you've heard before or whatever. Just think of a melody. And they can do it, you know, and then they can hum it and say, okay, you just wrote something. You know, now write a couple of words. You know, of course it's not going to be great, but I think people have more ability than they give themselves credit for.
Everyone sings, just that some people sing a lot better than other people.
Yeah, well, I know there's a lot of people that can't carry a tune in a bucket, but...
like some of the lead singers I've worked with. Oh, I wasn't supposed to say that. Maybe they're not listening. All right, let's get on to another cut. This is kind of controversial. We don't want any hate mail about this. No, I'm joking, of course. But the title of this cut is God in a Box, and this is another one of your pieces. What's coming up?
This basically came as a result of an actual conversation I had with somebody, I'm not sure how many years ago, where, you know, he was talking about his idea of God being a complete mystery and, like, you're wasting your time trying to figure out, you know, who God is or whatever. And, you know, of course, everybody has their own viewpoint of that kind of thing, which I respect, but I just couldn't agree with the idea that you know, I'm an avid Bible reader, and to me, God has taken such pains to reveal himself through his word, and to think that he's incomprehensible and mysterious is just, you know, I just don't understand how you can come to that conclusion. So this person was actually happened to be a pastor, and I kind of thought it's kind of a shame that's the best thing he can come up with, and he's in charge of a whole flock of people. So in the end, when I disagreed with him on that, he said, well, you know what, you can't put God in a box. And what he meant by that was, apparently he felt that I had, you know, invented an idea that I was comfortable with and I could understand, and so therefore I've kind of, you know, limited what God is and put him in a box. And I just thought, boy, I can't believe I just heard that. So I just immediately started thinking, you know, like G, F sharp, F, E, we got in a box, you know, and I said, one of these days I'm going to have to write a song about it. Took me probably about 7 or 8 years, but I finally did it, and here it is.
Is king, everything about him is a mystery. Wants you to know, biggest snowdrop ain't supposed to be. Open the book, take a good look at what a name can mean. Love you too, see right through the smoke screen. We got
Now that you've heard it, you cannot live without it. And Gary, where can they pick up your music?
Best place is cdbaby.com.
A terrific, terrific place to purchase CDs. You can spend, I don't know, a dollar and a quarter or $1.29 or something. Or a lot of them downloads are 99 cents, and the artist takes home 89 cents. Is that so cool or what?
Yeah, it's great.
Times, they have changed, Gary.
Yep. And you know, all the digital distribution they set you up with, it's really amazing.
Well, one tip, listeners, if you sign up with CD Baby, you will automatically be listed on virtually all of the other websites, meaning like iTunes and Rhapsody and blah, blah, yeah. blah, and blah, blah, blah. Or you can go sign up individually on all those. Now, why would you do that? Well, it doesn't cost anymore. You just sign up with CD Baby, and they take care of it for you. So just a tip. What other tip would you give, Gary, to all the young artists listening out there? We do have a nice young listening audience across the country and across the world. What would you tell them about music and how to get to where you are?
Ooh, what would I tell them? Well, I would say just enjoy the trip. I don't really know how to tell you if you want to play Madison Square Garden by the time you're 20. I don't really know what to tell you. But just don't get frustrated with the experience of making music. Just do it because you love it, and not because you're trying to make money or be famous or you know, impress anybody. Just for the love of the music, keep doing it.
Because the ones that don't do it for the love of music, you can pick them out of a crowd, I'm afraid. You know, the ones that just do it for the money. And I won't get myself and name any names, but you guys know who I'm talking about. Okay? Send hate mail to DJ at artistfirst.com.
Or you get a lot of people. I mean, I've been in a lot of these guitar duels where it's like somebody's trying to impress you with his dexterity. I'm like, what the heck is that about? You know, do you know how to play music? I don't really care if you've got a machine gun for a left hand. I'm interested in playing music, you know. So I think people like that sort of fizzle out after a while.
Well, if that's all you got. You know, if that's all you got is you can, you know, do all those Eddie Van Halen tricks on the guitar. But, you know, that's a part of music, usually about 4 to 8 measures in the middle of a song. But what about the rest of the song?
Yeah.
You know, can you hang? I like the way you phrased it, Steely Dan chords. See, people that don't know Steely Dan don't even know what we're talking about.
Right.
You should get to know Steely Dan just like you should get to know Gary Alt. Pick up his new CD, which is not for sale to minors. And is your are some of your past material also available?
Yeah, you can get my tribute album, which was featured last time on CD Baby as well, and it's also featured on my website, as well as an album that I finished just about a week before Not for Sale to Minors, which is a collaboration with my friend Jason. That's called, it's kind of a fictitious band name. It's called Beef Wellington and the Mad Cows. And the album name is Masticated Bovine. That was Jason's idea. It's just a fun kind of record. It's not to be taken real seriously. It's just sort of a lot of fun we had making it. And that's available.
Well, Gary, you're always welcome here. I'm not sure what we're playing of yours now. I know we're playing something of yours. There's a 200.
I believe you have queued up April, May, Soon.
Well, I'm sorry. That is the next song. Yep. What I was referring to is on the station some of your previous material that we played during the day, during our daily rotation.
Oh.
And I was trying to recall what those track titles were, but I'm looking at a list of over 260 tracks we play every day. And it's in there somewhere. I'll let you know.
Okay.
All righty, and thanks again for letting us play your music on our station. We appreciate it, and our listeners enjoy it every day.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, tell us about this last cut that we're going out on. April May Soon Miss You.
It's just April May Soon is the title. And this features a friend of my daughter's, well, actually all my kids, there's that word again. Her name is Missy Steinert. She's just a great singer. My kids were telling me about her. I get my words mixed up. My kids were telling me about her, and I sort of didn't believe it until I heard her sing. I thought, wow, she's got something going on. So I figured she'd be the one to sing this tune. And this actually goes back to, I read a book about songwriting when I started getting serious about it, like about maybe 15 years ago. And they talked about, Sheila something was the name of the writer. She talked about just playing with, you know, names of months and days of the week and come up with something. So I said, April, May, soon. It sounds like April, May, June, but it's different. And I wrote it down, and then I said, boy, that was really stupid. I'm never going to make a song out of that because it's just idiotic, you know. But I kept it in this file I keep of hundreds of phrases and titles. And I pulled it out and said, oh, I know what it's about. April may soon be coming home. You know, somebody that left home is on a spiritual wanderlust kind of a thing, but you want her to come home and, you know, realize what's really important. And so then I made sense out of it. And again, it's Missy Steinert singing.
Well, Gary, it's great to have you on. It's great to have you back. Please don't be a stranger as soon as your next project's ready, or if you just want to come back on anytime, man, you're always welcome here. And anything we can do to further your career and help you sell music, by all means, you let us know.
Well, thanks very much.
Okay, guys, that'll wrap it up for tonight's featured music special with Gary Ault. Our last tune is April, May, Soon. Thanks for being with us, everybody.
April may soon be coming, coming back home. Lost in illusion, turning where the wind blows. Tasting the freedom, the open air brings. April may soon walls couldn't hold her any more than paper chains. Break away, April, break away, seek the arcane. Why don't your song rise up to eat? What did you find there, April? What did you find? Spent all your free will following after the blind. A world of promises, how empty they be. Up and realize, April, you are to shine. The bed you left is waiting, the air is safe to breathe. Try the water and wait in, take back the life that we. April may soon be coming, coming back home. Open your eyes, oh April, open your eyes. The love you're seeking was right here.